Devlin here with you, and welcome to Devlin's Mondo Nostalgia Radio Show. I hope you're having yourself a wonderful day, and thank you for pressing play. I don't know what it was that caused you to hit play. Maybe you're a regular listener. Maybe there's something about the picture on YouTube you liked, or maybe you said, boy, I've heard about this for going on for about 4 years now, and maybe I should give it a shot, or whatever it is. It doesn't matter to me. I just thank you for listening. And maybe it's even one of the subjects I'm going to talk about, because sometimes in YouTube we write the subjects that we are going to talk about. But whatever it is, make yourself at home. I hope you have a good time and enjoy yourself. I'll be talking about some more thought-provoking stuff in the second half, but I thought we'd kick things off very lighthearted, because I got to finally see one of the movies I've been dying to see this summer. And in this jam-packed year of blockbusters, or movies they tell us are going to be blockbusters, but so far this movie season has produced probably more disappointments than it has actual blockbuster hits. I wanted to see a little film called Rocket Man. It's the autobiography of Elton John, and it was directed by Dexter Fletcher, and it stars Taron Egerton, Jamie Bell, and Richard Madden, and Bryce Dallas Howard, to name but a few. And I've always been an Elton John fan, and I don't know why I was so eager to see this. When I first saw the first teasers, it just looked amazing, and maybe I was on a Bohemian Rhapsody high, because for those of you who are regulars, you know Bohemian Rhapsody was my favorite movie of last year. So I was just eager to get more stuff. And this movie looked amazing. I didn't even know what to make of it because there were so many fantasy elements in it just from the trailer. So when I finally got to see it, it was so awesome that it lived up to everything I wanted. In fact, it maybe even went a little further than that. Rocket Man is a beautiful, well done film, and does something that people seem to want from autobiographies. When they do these movie biopics, they tend to, follow a certain trope. And, it's somebody's life story. So basically, you have to hit certain beats. And usually the best ones, I hate to say it, usually are, major success. And then that's when the troubles start, whether they're financial troubles, drug use, alcohol, I hate to say it, but most of the best ones usually like that. And then there's usually the decline. And then in most of them, not all of them, there's usually some kind of comeback or something like that. It could be anything. There could also be a sickness in there. But, people used to complain about this. But to me, when you're doing a biopic, I don't see how you can complain about, well, the story just seems like it's the story. Well, it's a person's life story. Of course, it's just going to feel that way. You can't just add aliens or like Godzilla coming and taking over the city. You got to follow it pretty faithfully. I'm also not too... Some people don't like when they take things out of order. I remember watching Bohemian Rhapsody, and there's a couple of major things that are taken out of order, but one actually almost jarred me. But because I was enjoying the movie so much, I just threw it. As a storyteller myself, I know that there are times that you have to, downplay certain parts of the story and over make some parts of the story over the top in order to tell a good story. Sometimes you have to move things and change things around in order to get a good story. So as a storyteller, I've never been bothered by that. But Rocket Man takes it to a different level, because I've never seen anything like this. I think somebody, one of the reviewers I used to watch, said that this was going to be compared to Bohemian Rhapsody because they're so close together. But this is kind of Bohemian Rhapsody meets Moulin Rouge, because there is a musical element in this. And that is something that I can't personally recall being in one of these biopics before. And when I'm talking about, biopics are musicals. But what I'm talking about is it's not just, here's a bit of his life. This is a song that came out around this time. Here's a bit of his life. Here's a bit of his life. And the characters now sing a song that's in his life. It doesn't even have to be a song that came out around that time, just a song that person wrote. Now, this stuff is used quite often in like stage plays or Broadway musicals of, people's life, but I've never seen it played out on the big screen like this, and it works incredibly well. The director in this, Dexter Fletcher, you may have sort of heard his name before. Bohemian Rhapsody last year was directed by Bryan Singer, but I won't go into the horrible details, but of course he became on the blacklist because of accusations that occurred to him, and Hollywood just kind of tossed him aside, and so did the movie company who was doing Bohemian Rhapsody. Dexter Fletcher is actually the guy that came in to finish the movie. Now, when Bohemian Rhapsody was released, Bryan Singer had directed the majority of it, so his name was on the credit, but the stuff that wasn't in there was directed by Dexter Fletcher. So this was our chance to see Dexter Fletcher take a whole movie of his own and make his own biopic, and he does an incredible job. As I said, once you get past the whole, and it is jarring at first. I even knew that the music was all sung in this, but it's jarring when you first see it, but it doesn't take long for you to forgive and forget because it's just so enjoyable, and Elton's music is so incredible. All the performances in this are also top notch. Taron Egerton is incredible as Elton himself. I have loved this young man. He's been in the Kingsman movies. He's been in Eddie the Eagle. He was in Robin Hood, which I think I was one of the only people who liked that remake. I didn't love it. I just thought it was really enjoyable fun. But I've always had a bit of a crush on him. I think he's a great actor, and I think people are going to really see it. He doesn't do it just an impersonation of Elton John. He loses himself in the character. So when you watch this movie, you don't see some guy playing Elton John. You see Elton John as a full-fledged character, and Taron brings so much of that. The other thing is Taron does all his singing in this, and he learns to sing like Elton John, but there are parts you can tell that he can't hit certain notes, but it doesn't matter because it still doesn't change how you feel about the characters. Jamie Bell, who's always brings it, ever since I saw him in Billy Elliot when he played the title role, he has just been, every time he's in something, even if it's not a great movie, you can always tell he's there. And he plays his writing partner, Bernie Taupin. And that's my favorite relationship in the movie because it's an unusual friendship. But it's also like the way they put the music together. I remember when I actually listened to Elton John, and I heard that Elton didn't actually write the lyrics. It was Bernie Taupin that did all his lyric work. Elton did the musical score. I was actually shocked because every time I listened to it, I thought that was Elton. But I was a young man, but now I have so much respect for Bernie Taupin and Elton John's collaboration. Bryce Dallas Howard is really good, almost unrecognizable as Elton's mother, and Richard Madden. I hope I'm getting that name right. He plays his agent, personal assistant, and it's a really well-crafted character, almost so much like I'm surprised his family aren't upset with how he's portrayed in this movie. Now, they take liberties. As I said, they move songs around, and of course, they change a lot of stuff, and they add stuff that really didn't happen, but from what I've seen, it's well worth it. The visuals in this movie are incredible. It's just too bad that, like, Rocket Man's not doing bad at the theaters, but I wish more people were seeing it. But I think a lot has to do with the fact that Elton John is still alive. And I don't want to sound morbid, but I think movies like Bohemian Rhapsody become more obsessed. Is because Freddie Mercury died, and we have this morbid curiosity. And I think sometimes the music we relate to even more once, one of the players in it are dead. Because, Queen has incredible music, but Elton John has just as much incredible music, I would say even more. And for people who love Queen, I think people need to find out about Elton John too. The thing I loved about this movie was they used so many of his great songs, and I won't tell you which ones they used because I like going to a biopic not knowing what I'm going to hear. But when we were driving home after, me, Mike, and Heather were all in the car, and we basically were raving about the movie, but we were also listing an incredible names of titles that weren't used in the movie. And that made us just realize just how much great music Elton John and Bernie Taupin have given us over the decades. It was amazing. Big name titles that weren't in this movie, that they could have made a whole other movie using these titles, and you'd still be like, oh, I love that song. I love that song. I think Rocket Man is probably going to be one of my favorite movies of the year. It'll be interesting to see if it makes it to my very top because of the fact that Bohemian Rhapsody was my favorite last year. I'd be like, oh, I'm going through a biopic phase. But Taron Egerton, I hope this movie wasn't released too soon because he really should get an Oscar nomination for his portrayal of Elton John. But because Rami Malek won it for Freddie Mercury, sometimes the Academy doesn't like to. Like, they like to repeat things, but not 2 years in a row kind of thing. So the fact that this came out, it came out earlier in the year. It's not making as much money as Bohemian Rhapsody. It could be a movie that, it would be easily to have forgotten by the time the Oscars roll around. If you're a fan of Elton John in any way, now I'll warn you, I have talked to some people that did not like the way this was done. They were hoping for just a straightforward biopic, and when the musical numbers came, they just didn't get it. I think this movie does go a little darker than Bohemian Rhapsody did. This is an R-rated movie, another reason why it's probably having, as I said, it's making money at the box office. It's made its money back, but it's not becoming a juggernaut like Bohemian Rhapsody was. I also think it's a bad time of year to release this. I know it's counter-programming. But, I'm glad Bohemian Rhapsody didn't go too dark into the, AIDS, HIV stuff, because the way I see it is with Freddie Mercury. He announced he had AIDS, and I remember the day he did. And he died of it within 48 hours, I believe. I'd have to do my homework on that. So he really didn't want to be a poster child of this. And I think Bohemian Rhapsody was a celebration of his life. This movie, too, with Elton, is definitely a celebration of life. But as I said, because Freddie is no longer with us, I think that's what people were. There was a mysticism. Because we know Elton John's still alive, he was out promoting the movie. I think it makes it less urgent to go see this film. But I am telling you need to go check this film. If you're a music lover, give this movie a chance. It's just beautiful to look at. The fantasy sequences are absolutely top-notch. I think this is just one of the best movies of the summer. I wouldn't be surprised if it's one of the best movies of the year. That being said, I've seen a lot of biopics, some good, some not so good, and I decided that I was going to mention a couple of my other favorite biopics. I've mentioned Bohemian Rhapsody many times. It was my favorite movie of last year. Just the sheer amount of people who've seen it, you've probably seen it too, but if you haven't, definitely check it out. It's a beautiful display of their classics and well put together. I know Bryan Singer has done some horrible things and been accused of a lot of things, but he should get some commending of putting together a well-crafted movie. So here's a couple of other biopics besides Rocket Man and Bohemian Rhapsody that you might want to check out. Walk the Line, the Johnny Cash story, I guess also the June Carter Cash story. This is Reese Witherspoon and Joaquin Phoenix. Of course, Reese went away with an Oscar for this. It's a really great film. I didn't know much about Johnny Cash except his music, and it's just a well put together film. Definitely check it out. It was up for many Academy Awards, and it is really A really great film. What's Love Got to Do with It? The Tina Turner story, played by Angela Bassett. Another great film. Now, this one is pretty standard in some ways, like it follows the story A to Z, but it's such a compelling story, and Angela Bassett does an incredible job. Lawrence Fishburne, I believe I'm getting right, does a creepily frightening portrayal of Ike Turner, and definitely does not hold back on the domestic abuse, emotionally and physically, that Tina went through. And it's a great movie that follows her to her ultimate comeback. And remember how I just said about a biopic is kind of like, this is what they're going through, and then they have a comeback. This is a perfect example of that. You see her humble beginnings, you see her become a superstar, you see her dealing at the top of her game, she's dealing with, violence from her husband. She's like the top of her game, and then this happens, and then her downfall, and then her comeback in the 80s, of course, with What's Love Got to Do with It and all the other massive hits she became even bigger than she was in the 60s. La Bamba is the story of Ritchie Valens. It's also one of the best portrayals of the night the music died, they call it, the day the music died. Ritchie Valens only had a couple of minor hits on the on the charts, but this is a well-rounded story. Lou Diamond Phillips takes the role. They take liberties, and this movie's a little hard to find, but if you can find it, it's a very entertaining film, and it's a great film because of the fact that he had Latino background, and he would have probably become really huge if he didn't die in that fatal plane crash that also took Buddy Holly and the Big Bopper. And it's just mind-blowing how big he could have gotten. And when you talk about the 60s and, Hispanic, it would have been an incredible journey to see how well he went. Also in that case, Selena with Jennifer Lopez. It's kind of a dark story, and if you know anything about the Latin singer Selena, it's a sad, tragic story. Now, she was just starting to cross over to the more North American market, but she was a huge Latin sensation, and she was just had her first couple of English language hit singles, and her life was taken tragically. And I won't tell you that one, but if you know how she died, it's just mind-blowing. Straight out of Compton, saw this a couple years back, didn't know anything about, I can't even think of the group. OPP? No, that's not right. NWA, I think, yes. This is a great movie. It taught me a lot. And it is just a well put together film. And even if you're not a big fan of hip hop and rap, it's still an interesting story about a group that did so much with for hip hop and rap and that whole community, and definitely worth a look at. If you can get your hands on it, it was a mini series and it was incredible. The Jackson's American Dream. This was a huge undertaking, and I want to say it ran something like 4 nights or 5 nights. You can find it on DVD, but I think it's a little harder to find now because it came out years ago. But this takes a look at the Jackson family. It highlights mostly Michael. But this came out, at the peak of, Thriller and Bad and all that stuff. So it's no surprise that it's going to concentrate on it. Now, I believe the Jackson family probably has more skeletons in their closet than pretty much any family in the music industry. And so they deal with some of it. But because this was kind of watched over by the Jackson family, you obviously don't get to see a lot of those skeletons, but a lot are hinted at, and it's a really interesting story to see, a family where, they were brought poor, and then one day the father realizes they're, kids have talent and just kind of pushes them to the brink. And the Michael part of it is absolutely tragic and sad. As I said, they don't delve into the real darkness, but they open up enough windows that you can see into their life and make lots of speculation. I was actually quite surprised, being the fact that the Jacksons had a hand in making this, how deep it did delve. But you'll need a couple of days to watch this, or if a rainy day. I remember a rainy day, Mike and I binged watched this, and it was just like, couldn't take our minds off of it. One of my all-time favorite biopics, in fact, it might be up there with Bohemian Rhapsody is one of my favorites, and maybe even Rocket Man, is The Coal Miner's Daughter. I saw this in 1980. I would have only been about 12, and I was obsessed with it. I saw it in theaters 3 times. I knew country music. My mother listened to it, and my older brother did, but I wasn't really. The only thing I knew about Loretta Lynn, I think, at the time was she was on The Muppet Show. And when I saw this movie, I absolutely fell in love with this character. Sissy Spacek won an Academy Award for this movie, and quite deserving. I think Tommy Lee Jones was worthy of an Oscar as well in this movie. The Coal Miner's Daughter is just a well put together thing. And this was a rare case because this was a big hit movie, but it only deals with half of Loretta Lynn's life. Loretta Lynn is still alive. And I don't know. I always thought it'd be interesting if they did a sequel with the second half of her life, but you're getting into some more stuff. If you know anything about Loretta Lynn, she got into some quirky stuff that would be, I'm not saying it wouldn't be interesting, I would just say it would be a little bit hard to take. Since this movie is so well crafted, if you don't know anything about Loretta Lynn, you've got to check this one out. Basically, she married really young and had a ton of kids, and her husband realized she could actually sing, even though she was this shy country girl, and he just forced her into it. And then she wound up falling in love with doing it. But as she was getting successful, her husband just hated that he was always off on the sidelines. It's a really interesting impact to see. And Sissy Spacek going from the sweet mousy girl, to this, woman who, like Loretta Lynn, people think of her just as a country singer, but she wrote so many like songs that were women empowering, stuff like The Pill and Rated X and You Ain't Woman Enough to Take My Man. Like, she was doing feminist songs before, that people were like, hey, that's a feminist song kind of thing. And it's an incredible story to see. Definitely check it out. A couple of other ones. I love The Doors. I know Oliver Stone gets a lot of trouble for being over the top and dramatic, and I believe The Doors did not like this movie. I think this is a phenomenal movie. Visually, it's absolutely stunning and it's just mind-blowing. And Val Kilmer, I think one of his best performances is his performance of Jim Morrison. I was obsessed with this movie when I saw it and became obsessed with the Doors. I had to listen to every Doors song I could find. I needed to know more about them. It's in a phenomenal movie and it's definitely worth checking out. Another one I definitely want to talk about is Backbeat. There's a lot of great Beatles movies out there. Nowhere Boy is a really good one, but my favorite is Backbeat. And ironically, this is a movie that actually takes a look at the life of probably a Beatle that you didn't even know was a Beatle. When you think of the fifth Beatle, a lot of people think it could be George Martin. Other people remember Pete Best, who was the original drummer, but this movie is all about Stu Sutcliffe, who is actually an original member of the Beatles, but left before they were successful. He was a young man that would go on to become an artist and actually live a very short life. But this is such a lovely story. They turned it, I believe, into a musical recently for Broadway. The thing I love most about this is the friendship between Stu and John. And I remember when it came out, I believe Yoko and Sean Lennon and Julian Lennon were not big fans of this movie because there were hints of almost like a love story between Stu and John. Now, they don't go into that detail, but there's definitely a love there. And I think that kind of bothered them a bit because it made it seem like they were hinting that John Lennon might have been bisexual. I think it's a beautiful film. If you get your hands on it, definitely check it out. Couple more. It's not an official biography, but 8 Mile with Eminem is pretty close to his life story. The names have been changed to protect the innocent, but he has even said this is the only movie Eminem ever did. If he did another one, it was probably just a cameo or something. It's really too bad. It's a great film. I just rewatched it with my nephew last year, and Eminem is got a chemistry. Like, he has a chemistry when you see his music videos, but he would have been a really great actor. I guess for some reason he just didn't want to do it. Two other small ones: Behind the Candelabra, the story of Liberace, played by Michael Douglas, and Matt Damon playing his boyfriend. When they told me Michael Douglas was going to take on the role of Liberace, I couldn't imagine it. And then he got a lot of acclaim. This was a TV movie, and I believe he won. I think he might have won a Golden Globe for this. But when I actually saw Michael Douglas playing Liberace, an older Liberace, obviously, he's actually really great. It's just when I see Michael Douglas, he's very masculine and he's very. So when I saw him play him with a little bit more of a flair and stuff, it's a great performance. And Matt Damon and him have an incredible chemistry. You could tell they probably had a lot of fun on the set. There's so many more I'd like to talk about. There's a couple of Elvis ones that are really good. But the last one I'll leave you with, I saw it a couple of years ago. It's a bit uneven and a lot of people didn't get to see it. But it's a musician I absolutely love and I think he needs more recognition. It's Chet Baker, and Ethan Hawke produced, I believe, maybe I'm wrong, and starred in the movie Born to Be Blue. It tells the life of Chet Baker trying to make a comeback after his life fell apart because of alcohol and drugs. And I've always been a Chet Baker fan. He's one of my favorite jazz performers. And this movie is a little uneven, but it's still great, and it's still a great introduction to a really tragic life that just kept going and going, and there was no apologies for the person he was. Anyhow, I could talk about biographies forever, but those are some of my favorite music biographies. And after you've run out and saw Rocket Man on my review, please check out some of these other ones and maybe make a night of it, you know. Here's a couple of country ones. Here's a couple of pop ones. Here's a couple of rock ones. Be a lot of fun. Anyhow, I'm going to take a short break. Then I'm going to be talking about, I'll talk about something. It's a little more heavy-handed and stuff, but I got to get my thoughts in order. So this is a good time for an intermission. So go take a bathroom break, grab some snacks, grab a beverage. I will be back in just a few short seconds. Minutes, depending on how much Corda puts in here, I'll be back with my second part of the podcast.
For your convenience, we have an attractive refreshment stand in the lobby with buttered popcorn, golden good and hot from the popper, your favorite candies, wholesome and rich with a flavor treat for every taste, ice cream and other good things to eat, plus delicious Coca-Cola. So bright and bracing with a tang and tingle unmatched by any other beverage. Enjoy ice-cold Coca-Cola at our refreshment stand right now.
Welcome back. Devlin here with you, and we're here on Mondo Nostalgia Radio. I knew I was going to get a little deeper on the second half, but I had to put my head, so it was hard to tell you exactly what I'm going to be talking about. Bear with me. Because I feel the need. Every once in a while, a topic comes up and I feel the need it has to be addressed. So this is going to go off into a tangent. I'm going to start it off, though, with something very unlikely for me, since I'm not a big sports fan, but I'd like to congratulate the Raptors on their NBA win. It was a history-making thing. As you know, they were the first. This is the first time the Raptors won the NBA championship, and it was well deserved, and it was great to see. It was history in the making, seeing Canada back in the spotlight for something that we had never been famous for. Although, if you watch that Heritage Minute thing, where it was a Canadian that invented basketball, so it was kind of nice that we finally won something in the basketball realm, since we apparently had something to do with its creation. Now, one thing I don't like about sporting events is after the Raptors won the night of, there was some rioting. In fact, there was some damage to a police car, and things got a little out of control. And although when they also had the parade home, there were gunshots. In fact, I believe two women were shot, but not fatally. They were going to survive. And then it caused people to be trampled. Now, I know a lot of that can be about the fact that they had overcrowding and they just didn't have enough time to prepare for this event. But what I always see on Facebook is it's really sad, is that you see all this happiness on Facebook, and I'm not the kind that, like, oh, look at all this sports crap on my thing. I kind of like it. I get the excitement for it. I understand why, some of the fans who were there when they were not doing so well and still there when they win. I even get the people that jump on the bandwagon, just because they want to cheer on something. I don't belittle any of those people. And I understand. I have a passion for movies and music, and so I get a passion for sports. I'd rather a passion for sports than like a passion for something hateful or something that harms people. So, I'm all for it. But then after, when the riots start making the news and, people trash things, you start getting Facebook filled with people posting about how these aren't the true Raptor fans. These are not the true Raptor fans, and we should remember that. These are just people who want to get drunk and trash stuff, and they use this for the reason. Now, I agree with all that. I totally agree. I think the true fans, they just want to, wave flags, yell a lot, drink, party with other fellow fans. And then there are these unruly ones that are just use anything for excuse to let's go damage a thing. Let's go shoot a gun and cause a stampede. I agree. These people are not true fans. But it's funny how quickly the fans go to the defense to say, well, it wasn't us. We're true fans. And I agree. And I'm glad you do that. Where I'm going with this is recently at Hamilton Pride, there were a group of protesters. And, this is Canada with free speech, so protesters are allowed as long as it doesn't get physical. So the protesters were out there, just a small group of them. And, they had their signs, Jesus hates you and all that kind of stuff. And there was a gay coalition that basically had big black banners that they could put up so the people going to the Pride Fest couldn't see the signs and wanted them to let it go. Now, the police don't usually get involved until something happens, and unfortunately, something did happen. Now, I wasn't there, so I'm only going by hearsay, but words got heated, and then one of the people who were attending Gay Pride basically got punched in the nose, and I believe their nose was broken. And then police came in. Now, this is where I came in, because I remember coming to the Pride Fest, and a whole bunch of police cars showed up with the paddy wagon. And I have to say that even though it's sad that the police can't get involved before this, they handled the situation like they got it cleared up pretty quick, because about 10 minutes later, I was at the Pride Festival. I looked over and that whole group was descended. The gays went to the Pride Festival and the protesters were taken away, and that area was just empty. So I gave them credit for that. But where I'm going with this is that I then saw, like, you see all the people that are supporting of gay, trans, pan, lesbian, you just anything. Supporters. And then suddenly I just see everybody bashing on churchgoers. You know, Catholics, Christians, anybody. And as this comes about, it really angers me a little bit because, yes, these people are, you know, they have their beliefs, they have their right to protest, but at the same time, we tend to group all the church people as one. And I can tell you by my personal experiences, I have a lot of religious people, Catholic, Christian, born again Christian, that have no problems with me. They support my lifestyle. They're supporters of gay and trans. They believe that, you know, they have their beliefs, so that might mean they might not do that, but they believe in the end that God is going to make the decision when we all go to heaven, and it's up to him to pass judgment. But I don't like the fact that we just assume everybody who goes to a church is against us. So just like the Raptors, I'd like to say that these few protesters, we're not even talking a lot, it was just a handful of them, do not represent real churchgoers. Now, there are churchgoers that do not like our lifestyles and stuff, but there are a lot of them that don't go out and spend their Saturday protesting a gay pride. They might look at us and not agree with it, but they can still be civil. But I also happen to know there's a lot of churches in Hamilton that actually welcome gay people in. And that needs to be said. Because I don't feel that they're getting... It's not fair to... We just say every churchgoer is bad. And it's just like these Raptors fans that start rioting. They get instantly supported, saying, not supported, by saying, these are not true Raptors fans. They're just people who want to cause trouble. And that should be the same for these protesters. Not every churchgoer should be ostracized because of this small group. And I just really wanted to get that off my chest because I have some very close friends that go to church. I have my beliefs myself. I've talked about my beliefs. I believe in a stronger, higher thing, whether that's God or Jesus. I talk to Jesus regularly, but I just don't think it's fair that we just group everybody who goes to a church or everybody who has faith is against us. I don't believe that. So I had to get that out there. The other thing I wanted to get out there is I was just mesmerized by the sheer number of people that were out at that Raptors thing. And on one side, it is an absolute beautiful thing to see. I don't like hearing the stories about overcrowding and gunshots causing people to get trampled. But at the end of the day, it's incredible to see people coming together and celebrating something that's historical. And like I remember reading my Facebook on that day and hearing people, you know, from Hamilton going to jump on the bus, and I'm sure they came from all over to celebrate for the day. And it's great to see. Like, I couldn't believe the crowds in the streets. But then there's another side of it that I'm not saying that we need to have violent protests and stuff. But another thing my Facebook and social media is filled with is, you know, everybody's hatred for all the stuff going on about education or all the cuts that Doug Ford's making. And I think if we even had a non-violent protest with the number of people that came out for the Raptors, like, if the number of people that were celebrating the Raptors are the same number of people that are against all these educational cuts, all these healthcare cuts they're making, everything they're doing, that shows you what kind of voice You have. Like, if somebody said, let's have a protest rally and see if we can let them know that we won't take this. Yes, there's a good chance it won't have any effect, but there is a chance that if we had the numbers of the people that went out to the Raptors support, I think it would make people at least look and say, you know what, we're outnumbered here. You know, we need to keep in mind these are also going to be voters. That's another thing. Imagine that every one of those people voted. Now, we know that's not the case because when we always get, you know, here's the number of people that voted, it's always incredibly sad at just how low the voting is for it. And imagine that's the crowd that turned out to a voting thing, you know? So, like, you know, like even in the States, you know, imagine like when Donald Trump is up, you know, to for his second term. If that amount of people showed up to a celebration to vote him out, and honestly, it's a democracy, so if they voted him back in, that's saying a point too, and I'm not saying anything against that. At least you got your voice heard. And then we'd know what the real moral majority is. It's actually kind of sad when you look at the voting and see just how many people turned out to vote. It's almost a little over half. It's embarrassing. Hundreds, 100% can vote, and sometimes it's as low as like 52. 53. It might have even been lower, but that would just depress me, so I'll try not to. The statistics are staggering. And I know so many people that don't vote that say, well, it's just one vote. Do you know how many people say it's just one vote? If everybody who said it's just one vote voted for one particular thing, that could affect a election. There are elections around the world where some people only needed a few votes to tip the scale. Yes, that can work in a bad way too, but at least we get the voice of the moral majority and not the voice of the half the moral majority. So when I see these celebrations of the Raptors, my heart grows warm to see, oh, look at that. We, you know, people are showing up. But then it also saddens me because if the same amount of people in this were doing that, we would get such things would be different. The problem is we become too relaxed, too cushy. You know, yes, we complain like, oh, Doug Ford's doing that now, Donald Trump's doing that now, but it doesn't matter. If we're in a good place, we don't feel the need to do that. You know, after the protesters at the gay pride, I saw so many people saying, you know, we got to work on dealing with this. You know, and, you know, I saw a friend rally saying, you know, get involved, get involved. And I admit, I'm a person that doesn't always get involved. I want to consider changing that. But the truth of the matter is if we all said that, and we all said, let's get involved. But all you heard was complaining and whining, and then this woman wanted to just take action. Let's make a group. Let's find out where these people are going to protest and make sure that, you know, we let them know this isn't going to happen. But as soon as that happened, all the complainers and whiners, and they weren't there to say, yeah, I'll lend my support. And I'm taking my part in this too. I'm taking my part in this too. Because I certainly didn't, but I definitely, obviously, gave me food for thought. What I do want to take from the Pride Festival is that Hamilton Pride had more people there than I've ever seen. I remember going to my first Pride probably way over 2 decades ago, and it was just a very small affair. And to see it grow the way it has, and to see it, you know, introduce, you know, more love for trans and lesbian and pansexual and bisexual, and just, you know, I don't know who I am. I think it's great that we include include all of that, and they have their own things. But in some ways, we're also getting too many labels, I believe. I think pride should just be for everyone, and it should be just that. I think we're going into a dangerous state where we start labeling everything. I've talked about this in the past. I think pride should just be like all of us, but now it's great to see the numbers coming out for Pride, and you see a lot of straight people supporting us and stuff. I love the seeing the amount of parents who are there with their young kids. It was incredible. And but I worry that if we label each other too much, it's going to be start being about, well, this is this group, this is this group, this is this group. Yes, I totally agree. We need to have our own identities. But I think there's times where we have to come together as a group, because if we separate too much, then we're just going to be smaller groups. But it should all fly under the one Pride banner and then be proud of individual groups. Kind of like, you know, I don't like to sing the praises of the states. I've always been a fan of the great American melting pot, where you can be proud to be Italian or Irish or Ukrainian or Hungarian or Polish or whatever. But at the beginning, first and foremost, you're American. We don't really have that in Canada. We have our own identities, but it's amazing when you see how many people have lived here for over 40 years and still don't know how to speak English. You know, that they basically, I love that they get to keep their own heritage, but I think at the top of the hour, they have to be Canadians first. That's just my way. I have no problem bringing refugees in. If you live here, you're Canadian first, and then your identity is a strong part of you, but you are a Canadian first. You want to come to Canada, you're a Canadian first. I don't know. I don't think that sounds racist. I think it just, to me, it makes a stronger nation and a stronger community, because this is our country. This is your country now. You should cherish it as your country. Still keep your values from your homelands and stuff like that. But this is now your country, and you need to dedicate yourself to that country. So I've been rambling on about just about everything, but I think I got my points across. Let me know if you agree or disagree with me. I know I don't get to, I don't know if this is considered political. I guess this is the closest to political you'll ever see me get. On a side note, I got to see Carol Pope perform at Hamilton Pride. She was just amazing. I've always been a fan of Carol Pope with Rough Trade. And when I heard she was coming, I was excited. But I had people coming over later that night, and I thought she was going to be put on later in the afternoon, because Pride went to 6. But we were walking around, and it was about 2:30, and they announced Carol Pope. So I got to see her sing some great music, and definitely sing some Rough Trade songs, which is great. I don't know. I don't have a bucket list, but if I did, Carol Pope singing Cream My Jeans out and live is definitely would be crossed off of it, because I remember as a kid, I always loved that line. Even when I didn't really know what that song was about, just when you're a kid, Cream My Jeans. This is great. I go from a full protest thing to talking about Cream My Jeans. I know a couple of people who absolutely hate that term. I think it's a term we should bring back. I know in this woke generation that would never happen, but, I don't know. I just think it's a fun, goofy little saying. So it was really great to see Carol Pope. And as I said, I loved seeing all the different trans people and the different, pansexuals and the bisexuals and the straight people that were celebrating us. I loved seeing little kids with rainbow flags on their shirts. I loved seeing boys wearing pink and girls wearing blue. I loved seeing them have their face painted with rainbow colors or, the pansexual colors. It was so nice to see. I hadn't been to a Pride in a couple of years. And it's nice to go out and remind people, hey, I'm gay. But, it's just a small part of me. But I forget that there is a reason. But then later I came home and I celebrated with some friends. And I had a couple of straight friends there. And I'm I share my Pride Day with everyone, as I've talked about last week's episode. But it is just refreshing to see all the different people that have come out and support Pride. And, you know, I get the protesters are allowed to protest, but it should never get violent. And I hope that's something that we see the end of at some point. I don't know. I personally don't think I'll see it in my lifetime, but I've certainly seen exchanges. You know, I remember being a kid being terrified of people finding out I was gay. And now seeing young people just being so alive with it is so... I can admit as an old guy that that melts my heart a little bit. As an old guy, I always believe I can teach these young whippersnappers about anything. But then I remind myself that sometimes the young can teach me too. And I'm so glad for the older generation than me that had to fight for so many things, that had to sneak behind, you know, sneak in alleys or hide away in the dark spaces of the world to just be intimate with the person they wanted to be. Whether you were gay, lesbian, bisexual, it's kind of refreshing to see how that all came about. And I say praise to the younger generation that teaches me and the older generation that teaches me too. And if you are one of the younger generations, sit down and talk with one of the older generations. I don't care if you're gay, straight, or anything. There is stuff to be learned, and hey, they may actually learn something from you too. It's not that far-fetched. Anyhow, I hope you had a good time today us talking about biopics and Pride and protesters. Next week, I don't know what we'll have. I'm going to try to get some guests coming in, or co-hosts, that's what I call them. But we'll see what happens. Anyhow, thank you for joining me today, and I look forward to seeing you and talking to you very soon.